Hello, everybody. And this is me again. I'm Anthony Harris. I'm your host for the podcast, Looking Back, Moving Forward. It's been a while since I have posted an episode to that podcast. I've been a little busy the last 9 months or so. I went back to work. I didn't have to go back to work, but I chose to go back to work to work over at one of the HBCUs in my area. And I'm so happy to be there and making a difference, I hope. And so my time has been kind of not as consistent to do these podcasts, these episodes of podcasts, as I have wanted them to. I'm not blaming my job for any of those things. But anyway, I'm back. I'm going to try to get back into a regular routine, regular consistent routine of posting some episodes about things that I have thoughts and feelings about, and I just want to share those with you. And what I want to do is start with the January 6th Select Committee in the House of Representatives. For those who don't remember, right after the insurrection on January 6th, there were a number of even Republicans who went to the well of the Senate and castigated Donald Trump. I remember Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, and Kevin McCarthy. They all went to the floor and said Donald Trump bore some moral and ethical responsibility for what went on at the Capitol on January 6th. And they appear to want to distance themselves from Donald Trump and the attempted insurrection by these followers of Trump. But as we all know, not long, maybe a week or two after that, they changed their minds. They weren't as upset with Donald Trump as they had pretended to be when they spoke on the floor. They, particularly Kevin McCarthy, he went to Mar-a-Lago where Trump was hanging out, and figuratively speaking, kissed his ring and cowered, if you will, before Donald Trump. And after that, he started singing a different tune. And we know why he did it. Kevin McCarthy wants to be the next Speaker of the House. And he knows full well that he cannot become Speaker of the House, which means that Republicans will be in control of the House of Representatives after the 2022 election. And he knows in order to get into that position, he needs Donald Trump. And more than he needs Donald Trump, he needs Donald Trump's supporters. And there's not a whole lot of daylight, really, between Trump and his supporters. They love what he says. They love what he stands for. They love the fact that he lacks character. He lacks a moral compass. They like that about him for some reason. I think somebody... psychoanalysis is called for when you're trying to figure out why do people still worship and adore and follow Donald Trump. But at any rate, we know what happened after the reality of perhaps losing the opportunity to become Speaker of the House looming over him. He decided to do a 180 and decide that Donald Trump really wasn't the bad guy, really wasn't the person responsible for January 6th. And then after that, there was a call for a bipartisan commission in the sort of like the 9/11 commission, where people would try to sort out the facts, sort out what happened, and more importantly, what can be done to keep this from happening again. Initially, it was going to be bipartisan. The idea was for it to be bipartisan, and initially, some Republicans said they would support it. But then all of a sudden, I guess they got a call from Donald Trump. Trump said, don't support it. And they backed off and said, no, we're not going to support that. So Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, said, we're not going to let that stand in the way of doing this investigation. So she appointed the Select Committee and, of course, invited Kevin McCarthy to name some Republicans to serve on the committee. And of course, what he did was name people like Jim Jordan from Ohio, who's like a little pit bull who has no sense of fair play. He loves the camera. He loves to stir things up. He's not interested in finding solutions. He's interested in arguing a point. And that's what he's famous for. He doesn't always make sense when he argues his points, but that's what his role is in the House of Representatives. So Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, said, no, we're not going to have this guy. And there was one other Republican who was in the same vein as Jim Jordan, and she rejected him as well. Instead, she asked Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger from Illinois, and Liz Cheney, of course, is from Wyoming, and they agreed to serve. So that makes it a bipartisan committee. Nobody can say Republicans weren't represented on there. They can say there weren't any pro-Trump Republicans on there. But this is the point of all of this was to get to the truth. And when you have people like Jim Jordan and people like that, they're not interested in getting to the truth. They're interested in protecting Donald Trump and his legacy. As sullied and as awful as it is, they still want to protect that. So what we have seen, Benny Thompson as chair of that committee, and Liz Cheney as vice chair of that committee, they have done some really remarkable hearings. And what's quite interesting about this is that most of the people, I would say 95% of the people who have come before that committee, either in deposition or live testimony before the committee, have been Republicans. These are not just Republicans, but these were Trump Republicans who served in the White House, who served in some capacity as advisor. Bill Barr, for example, the Attorney General, and Trump's lawyer, Cipollone, all these people have now come forward because they're under oath. They were subpoenaed. They had to come. And they did, and they told the truth. And I think that's the thing that some Republicans out there, that's one of the reasons, and of course Fox News too, they don't want people to know about this. They claim it's a kangaroo court, that it's not fair to Trump. And again, most of the people who are testifying under oath about what they heard and what they saw, what they witnessed, are mostly Republicans. Again, these are Trump Republicans. So it's kind of odd that they would still not want to get to the truth about what happened on January 6th. And of course, so many of them were in denial about what happened on January 6th. There was this representative from Georgia who said it was the January 6th when that happened, the insurrection happened, the rioting. He said it was just like a normal tourist day at the Capitol. And he didn't back down from that. I mean, he just, it's just amazing how much in denial they are. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson, he talked about being afraid. He really wasn't afraid, but he said if those had been BLM or Black Lives Matter people, he probably would have been more afraid. And the implication there is that if it were a group of Black people running through the Capitol, he would have been scared to death. But the fact that these were mostly white rioters, he felt he was not in any danger. Couple of things that have come out of that hearing that I think are really worth noting is that it's clear that Trump knew that so many of those people, many of those people who were there to hear him, had weapons. In fact, he told some of the security personnel to not use the magnetometer to scan for weapons. He said, they're not here to hurt me. And he knew they were coming onto the site, onto the Ellipse, and perhaps even go down to the Capitol with their weapons. But as long as he figured they were not going to hurt him, would hurt someone else, he gave it a pass. He thought that was an okay thing to do. So the committee is really taking a deep dive into these things. Cassidy Hutchinson, the young lady who really opened up just a cascade of information that she was privy to, including the Secret Service. And we've seen recently what's happened with the Secret Service. Interestingly, they have lost some text messages from January 5th and 6th. And if anybody thinks that's just a coincidence, you're really not living in the real world. those Secret Service agents were there to protect Trump, and they don't want any bad information or any negative or the truth to come out about Donald Trump. One of those guys who was involved in that, he was at that time a former Secret Service agent who volunteered to go work for Donald Trump as his director of security. And then after Trump left office, he went back to being an agent for the Secret Service. So there are lots of, you hear these reports about some of these Secret Service agents. They really like Trump. They had a bias in his direction. You would think these would be neutral in their politics, and because they have to be there to serve all the presidents and their families, regardless of their political affiliation. But if they are going into those positions with some political bias, that they favor one party over another, that's not good. They're supposed to be impartial. Of course, we always thought that was true of the Supreme Court, too, that they would be impartial. They would be neutral arbiters of disputes and so forth. But we've seen that's not the case. But anyway, what we've learned about January 6th, I think, is going to be something that will be hopefully in the history books. You know, I say hopefully because the way some of these right-wingers are going now, they want to whitewash what's in the history books. It would not surprise me that at some future date, if they're still in power, they will probably say you can't tell the truth about January 6th, or as Kellyanne Conway say, we're going to present alternative facts about January 6th. So we just have to wait and see how the history books will report this. But we know that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General for the U.S., he's collecting information. I think the people who work in the Justice Department, they are slowly behind the scenes in a very quiet, methodical way, building a case, and I think some indictments are going to come. If you're like me, you hope one of those indictments includes Donald J. Trump. But I think there will be some other people as well. And some people say, well, you know, wouldn't it divide the country if Donald Trump was indicted and had to go to trial? No. I mean, you can't let somebody attempt to overthrow the government and continue to do that with those lies. And see, the guy knew. He knew when he had that rally January 6th, he knew that he had lost the election. Everybody told him, Donald, you lost the election. And he said, well, I think I won. Well, what makes you think you won? There's no evidence that you won. But then he was listening to these nutcases like Rudy Giuliani, and who kept whispering to him, and Mike Lindell and Peter Navarro and these guys telling him, oh, yeah, you actually won. You won by a landslide. Don't believe the facts. Don't believe what these 60 judges said that you lost. Don't believe your attorney general. Don't believe these Republicans, secretaries of state. Don't believe any of those people. Because as long as you say you won, that will always keep doubt in people's mind. And that's the whole point of it, is to sow doubt and confusion. And ultimately to cause people to lose confidence in the electoral system, to cause them to lose confidence in this democracy. And I think that's part of the motivation for some of these people to do what they want to do, because they really don't like democracy. They really don't like it. And they don't, as long as they win, okay, if they win, oh, it was a fair election. If they lose, oh, it was fraud. Of course, you remember Donald Trump, even before the election in 2020, he said, the only way I would lose is that the vote is, that's fraud, and there's going to be all kinds of people trying to steal the election. He did that even before the election. And I think he's trying to, this lady, Carrie Lake, I think she's running for governor of Arizona, maybe for another position. She's a diehard Trump guy. I mean, she used to be a television anchor, news anchor out in Arizona, but she's decided to join the Trump train and has said the other day that if I lose, it's because there are some shenanigans going on. People are trying to steal the vote, all those things. So don't be surprised if she loses and then she will get angry because she has lost. She won't accept the fact that she got fewer votes than her opponent. She has to say that there's something else wrong. Now, the last thing I'll say about January 6th, and maybe the next to the last thing I'll say, but one of the things that has come out of the committee hearing is Josh Hawley, who is a senator from Missouri. And if you remember, Josh Hawley, there's this famous picture of him giving a salute with his fist to the demonstrators who were coming up to the Capitol. He was showing his support for them. He was showing that he was in solidarity with them, and he was there with them. He pumped his fist, you know, and that was a message he was sending to these rioters. There's also this image, if you will, of Josh Hawley running when, as these same people he was saluting and supporting, entered the Capitol, and it showed him to be, you know, actually a coward. On the one hand, he says to the crowd, "I'm with you, I support you, we're all together, we're solid." And then you see him running down the hallway, you know, being the chicken that he was and still is. I think that is such an image that he's going to have a hard time living down, because he tried to be a bully, but like many bullies, they're cowards. And he showed just how cowardly he is. So Josh Hawley, that guy he's going to have to answer to the voters of Missouri, and I hope they do the right thing. Another thing that I want to talk about is, you know, the economy is, depending on who you listen to, I mean, the economy is having some issues and some challenges right now. Inflation is up. GDP is, you know, this past month, the GDP went down. In other words, the economy contracted. Instead of growing in a positive direction, it went into a negative direction. And of course, the Republicans are saying, aha, we need to have Republicans in office. We need to elect these Republicans in 2022. We need to have a Republican president in 2024 because of all these economic issues and challenges and inflation. Gas prices are up, food prices are up, rent is up, everything is up. And there's no doubt about that. But what they seem to not want to acknowledge, and here's something that I take to heart. Inflation is, those numbers go up and down. GDP, that goes up and down. It varies, it fluctuates. It can go one year this way and one year another way. And we are accustomed to that. Economic policies change with every administration. We live in a global economy, so what happens around the world affects what goes on in this country. And we don't live in a bubble, as many people would like to think we do, but we are part of a global community. And when economic conditions worsen in other parts of the world, same thing happens here. But and my point is that these numbers fluctuate. And it's temporary. It's a transient type of temporary situation. Now, what I would say to the Republicans is the stain on democracy caused by Donald Trump trying to overthrow the government and all of his supporters and his acolytes, that stain will last forever. It's not like inflation where it would just go up and down until because we have a strong economy, you know, things are going to work out. Eventually, inflation is going to come under control. But this idea that we can overthrow the government, that we can lie, we can have fake electors, we can get on the telephone and tell a secretary of state, just find 11,000 more votes for me. That's all I need you to find. Just find 11,000 votes. All those things that Trump did, that is going to be with us forever. It's not going to fluctuate. It's not going to go away. And when I look at which of those two, the stain on democracy or the fluctuation in inflation, which one has the greater potential negative impact on this country? And I would say it's the Donald Trump effort to destroy democracy, the stain that will be there forever because he and his people started this notion that that the election was stolen, and they're trying to foment doubt about the electoral system. All those things are going to be written in the history books. And I think, you know, people look back in 2020 and 2021 and say, I don't know what the inflation rate was like in 2020 or 2021. But boy, when they look back at January 6, 2021, people will really remember someone really trying to overthrow the government. And that can't stand. That just cannot stand. The last thing I want to say is, I've been watching this story develop over the last few days. Jon Stewart, who used to be on The Daily Show, has really brought to light what's going on with these Iraqi war veterans who have experienced some additional illnesses and cancers and so forth after being involved in these pit burns, where the toxins and all those things have wreaked havoc on these soldiers. And there's something called the PACT, P-A-C-T, PACT Act, that was passed by the House of Representatives to provide extra funding for these veterans to get the help that they need. Well, on June 16th, that bill came up, and Republicans voted for it. 84 Republicans voted for it. The vote was 84 to 14 or something like that. The majority of Republicans did vote for it. Now it's come up again. It had to be sent back because of some administrative issues, some minor issues with language. And once it came back after these administrative issues were worked out, the Republicans decided, no, we're not going to vote for this after all. Yeah, the veterans need it, but no, we're not going to vote for it. And it's a gimmick on their part, as Jon Stewart has talked about. It has to do with discretionary spending and mandatory spending. And this has been the way bills like this have been around for a long, long time. And for some reason, Republicans took this bill to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we're not going to do this mandatory versus discretionary spending because we think the Democrats are trying to hide some money so they can spend money in a discretionary way, and we don't like that. Well, they were using the veterans as pawns is basically what they were doing. They could have made their point. They could have, in past instances, decided to draw a line in the sand, and they didn't do it. But they chose to use these veterans, who many of whom are in terminal cases, some are in hospice, some are facing huge medical problems and challenges and financial issues resulting from all of that. And these Republicans, Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, these guys they just don't seem to have any shame. They voted for the bill on June 16th. And, you know, almost 6 weeks later, they said, oh, no, we don't support the bill we voted for. You know, what kind of leadership is that? What kind of statesmanship is that? None whatsoever. Okay, I think that's all I'm going to talk about today. I've got to get my game back on. I've got to. I thoroughly enjoy doing what I'm doing here. This is so much fun for me. It's cathartic in so many ways. It's my way of ranting, and it forces me to stay on top of things as I read the news and listen to the news. It forces me to look at what the issues are and study the issues, and I'm just pleased to be able to share that with you. I will post another episode, hopefully next week. I'm sure there's something going on in the world that I need to talk to you about, and I'll be sure and do that. But in the meantime, if you have some questions or if you want to have some comments or communicate with me in some way, you can always contact me at my email. It's aharris007@yahoo.com. I welcome any of your comments, and feel free to leave them, and let's see what happens after that. Okay, y'all take care. Bye-bye.